We've got a full house in this studio right now. I think we've got Trina, who is a clairvoyant and also an author, and she'll be talking about her new book, Clairvoyant Among the Coconuts. So that's going to be very, very interesting. And we also have John. He's a local Brightonist, if you call people from Brighton a Brightonist. And he is a local kinesiologist, so that should be pretty interesting as well. Now, we're going to get the disclaimer over and done with because we can't wait to hook into talking to these guys. Now, the views and opinions on Moonlighting with Tea program are those of the hosts, guests and callers, and not necessarily those of Morton Media Group, holder of the license, broadcasting as 99.7 Bridge FM, its management, programming and sponsors. This program is for entertainment purposes only. We love it like that. Anyway, we've got all the great rock variety you absolutely love, but I think we're just going to kick in with Dire Straits, A Walk of Life, and then we're going to come back with Trina. I hope you're really enjoying your Monday evening. I know we're going to be talking to Trina, and she is the author of Clairvoyant in the Coconuts, is that right?
No, Clairvoyant amongst the coconuts.
Amongst the coconuts, yeah. of course. Now, we just want to ask you, when did you first realise you actually wanted to write a book?
I've always written tea since I was a little girl.
Okay.
And I've always known I was going to write a book. I thought it would be when I was older. But it was just, last year I just said, no, now's the time. I started off writing and realised I had three books and then went, well, hang on, what's the most important one? And it was Clairvoyant Amongst the Coconuts.
So okay.
I could have started off with a number of books. You know, growing up with my abilities, what it's like to live with my guides and spirit, meditation. But this one, it did change my life quite a bit.
So what or who influenced you in visiting the Solomons the first time, and what made you continue to return there?
My partner and I were based over in the Solomons. My partner worked for Australian Aid. I was teaching expats meditation as well as the islanders. And throughout that time, I was also doing, online reads and also writing. But I did find and connected with a school called Hope Christian School, which is down in a slum in Quah Hill. Not many people go down there, definitely not many white people. But I've continued to journey back once or twice a year because I'm so passionate about the school, but also the community. It is a community that is often shunned, even by their own people.
Okay.
But I'm always welcome down there. I never feel threatened at all. So that's why I continue to go back. I used my own money to go over, to travel over there, accommodation. It is not cheap to live over in the Solomons. Very expensive, actually. But it's become, I suppose, my second home.
Yeah. Yes. So you mentioned your guides in spirit a number of times throughout your book. So how do you play a role? How do they play a role in your life, these spirit guides?
My guides, and I call them my people because there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
But they've been with me since I was a child.
Okay.
I'd probably spent more time talking to my guides and people that were dead rather than living people when I was young. Hence was I loved to write. I loved to read because quite often the living people would probably be more scary to me than any dead person.
Okay.
Mainly because you have to understand, as a young child, you can read someone's mind. So someone that may show the community that they are perfect individuals, may not be that perfect. So you see through that guise. But it also teaches you many things.
Children are very open to that,
yes,
definitely.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you get older, you lose that, I guess, ability
yeah.
To see maybe your spirit guides or to see certain things.
Mm. In our family, and even with my own children, I have two adult children as well as a grandchild, we always encourage. It's not made a special thing. It's just like, you know, someone can play a piano. Some people can hear spirit, see them, sense them. That's just, we class it as normal, which it is to us.
I know you haven't got your headphones on, Misty, but you had a friend, didn't you, as a kid? I remember you talking about, did you have a special friend?
I had an imaginary friend
yeah.
called Ebenezer, but I don't have real memories of him.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I just know they used to set a plate for him at the dinner table.
Oh, right.
And then my granddad would eat it afterwards. But I talked to him all the time. And then my aunt, I found out years later that my aunt, who's 25 years older than me, actually had the same imaginary friend named Ebenezer, and it's just a very unusual name, and we didn't really have much to do with each other because of the age, so it's interesting.
It's a very, very common story. Yes. We again encourage a child, if they have an imaginary friend, as you call it, because quite often we can see that it's not imaginary, mm-hmm. that they have someone that is guiding them, helping them, encouraging them.
Mm.
A guide will always be a positive influence on you. There's no negative aspect to a guide.
Okay. So when you're working with your guides in spirit, you mentioned that they've always taught you that flexibility is important. Can you explain to me why?
When we work with spirit, it is very, very important that you allow flexibility, because you're dealing in so many personalities. There's never ever allowed to be judgment. But we also have to be flexible where we can work. So whether it be a busy shopping center, here on the radio. This is my first time, as I said, on the radio, but it is something where we just throw ourselves in, and normally we will come through quite strong, because
yep.
we're, I suppose, supported by our guides. Flexibility is also something that, you know, it helps you grow, and that's what I think what we're here for, is to evolve, to become, you know, the best person that you can, or best version that you can be of yourself. So if you're always just in this comfort zone, it's not going to happen. You can't put the different levels on you.
Yeah, you definitely need to step out of your
yeah.
comfort zone. And
yeah.
There's always a reward when you do, as scary as it is.
Yeah.
You know, and you at least feel some sort of, you know, more strength mm-hmm. once you've done it, once you've stepped out of that comfort zone. I know I've done it over and over again, and I continue to do it, and I will continue to do
yeah.
it until it's my time to go.
Yeah,
you know?
It's an important
keep doing crazy things
to grow. yeah. I always remember the first time I said to someone, "Oh, I'm leaving my town, my family, and moving over to a third world country," and they thought, "Seriously?
No, really?"
And, you know, I did look into it clairvoyantly before I left, but when I landed there was a lot I didn't see. But again, we're not shown everything, mm. because otherwise we control everything.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so, but yeah, people were very, very surprised, because in where I come from originally, Victoria, I was booked out as a clairvoyant, you know, 6 months or more ahead. And
so you were quite comfortable in
yeah,
what you were doing.
Yeah, you yeah. know, always doing new things, but
yeah.
I was used to reading all the time. At that stage, I hadn't gone online to read. I used to do email reads and things like that, but by going over to the Solomons did push me into going online reading.
Okay. We might need to go to the sponsor break, so we're going to have a couple of very special messages, and we do love our sponsors. Thank you very much. And we'll have Trina back on 99.7 Bridge FM, and Raven might have a few
cues. Oh, I've got plenty to say.
Oh, awesome,
yeah.
Awesome.
When
all
do
right.
I not?
All right, we'll be back shortly. Books on 99.7 Bridge FM. You're moonlighting with T, Raven and Misty on this absolutely splendid evening. And we have Trina in our resident clairvoyant, because I believe you are from Redcliffe.
Yes,
is that right?
Ma'am. That's
yeah,
great, T.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're the author of the book Clairvoyant Amongst the Coconuts. I was going to say Coconuts Amongst the Clairvoyants.
That too. I've seen that.
Now, I believe you've got some questions.
I do. I've got some questions tonight. I'm a bit excited. I love when we have guests come in. So firstly, I actually really love your title. I think it's very catchy and it's something a bit different. I know in the, I guess, the spiritual and the metaphysical world, quite often those titles can be pretty serious and pretty full on, and it almost diverts you a little bit away from them, and just having a look at the book, and the cover's absolutely amazing, and seeing that there, and I'm like, clairvoyant amongst the coconuts, got to be something, you've got to turn it over and see what it's all about. So absolutely well done. And also, I guess, clairvoyant, and I think my question to you is, for those that maybe haven't heard these kinds of words before, because mm-hmm. some people don't, because there's lots of different I guess psychic senses or abilities that you hear about. So what is clairvoyant?
A clairvoyant is someone that can see in the past as well as into the future. But that also entails a lot of things. So quite often it depends, I suppose, what your expertise is.
Yeah.
But clairvoyance also can entail maybe going into the medical side of things.
Yeah.
So opening up a human body and seeing how the organs work and that sort of thing. Even with business, quite often I'll work with, you know.
So all different aspects, really. It's just depending on what's sort of coming through.
Yeah.
And when you say see it, can you describe what that is, or what that is for you?
I'm a clairvoyant medium, so I was actually born with all my senses.
Yeah.
So my strongest sense, even if I become very ill, is my clairaudience, where I can actually hear spirit.
Ah, excellent.
Right. So people have to understand that with the senses, especially when you're working with them professionally, if you become ill or when you're working, sometimes that can actually be quite draining on the immune system.
Yeah.
But when I say see, when I was younger, I would see, say, the passed over people, or the dead people, as I call them, because seriously, they're dead. I'm pretty straight talking, and I mean no disrespect there.
No.
But I would see them pretty much like I see you. That used to interfere with my life, though, because as you can imagine, if you walk into your bedroom, turn the light on, and there's a man standing there, takes you a couple of seconds to go, oh no, you're okay, you're a dead man.
You're dead.
Yeah.
So I guess you have to ask that question sometimes, you know, do you see them too? Like, if you're sitting there, I guess when you first were coming into it, or when you're first being able to see people that have passed over.
So, yes, well, that's always what I've done.
Yeah.
So as I got older, I learnt to put them up on a screen, almost like I'm watching a drive-in movie.
Yeah.
That also can give you more detail too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, so if I'm looking clairvoyantly, most times I won't look at my client. I'll be looking over onto the right side is usually where I see my clairvoyance. The left side is where I work with the dead people.
Yeah.
Right, but putting it up like a drive-in screen actually gives me more detail.
So you actually think it's sort of not so much in the head, but outside
of the head.
And that kind of movie playing out.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. And so when you're watching that movie play out, you can hear things? That's the clear audio,
clairaudience,
I think you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's
somewhat like putting a jigsaw puzzle together.
Okay.
So I'm hearing, seeing, but often smelling and tasting. So say if I'm working with someone that is from a different country that's yep. passed over. We always want them to speak in English because I don't know. It's easier for the clairvoyant
yes.
or the medium. But quite often they will allow me to taste something
yep.
that is their cultural dish, and so I can describe that.
So it's almost like the best way they can come through with it and then you being able to
because
do it.
We also, as a medium, have to give you proof of survival.
Yeah.
Right, so we have to prove that they're still, you know, that
yeah.
one, I'm not a shonky.
No.
And two, that they have been watching over you.
I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot. So I guess all of your, we'll say, normal senses that you're using in everyday life to keep you safe and well and all of those things then come through also in a psychic version of them.
An amplified version.
An amplified version yeah. of them. So do you find going, if you're going somewhere that's maybe a crowded place or there's a lot of people or things like that going on, do you find that difficult?
It can wear me down, but I was always taught in a very traditional way.
Yeah.
Right, so we have an off-on button. Right, so
handy.
Coming into
need
here,
one of those for my kids.
Yeah.
yeah.
always handy. But coming into here, that button's off.
Yeah.
Right, so I don't actually, you know, see what's happening with you in the future or,
yeah.
or talk to your people, loved ones that are passed over.
Yeah, and I have one more question before I ask mm-hmm. you something about the book I knew because I'm so curious.
Yeah.
Do you get things for yourself?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I am a very good judge of character. My partner will attest to this.
Yes, of course.
Because he's not. Sorry. But that is using all my senses. But that's also protection from my guides as well.
Yeah.
But
I guess in life you've still got life lessons to learn and things to go through. And
if I need to do a reading,
yep.
I will normally do automatic writing.
Nice.
Right, which is basically I have my eyes shut
mm-hmm.
and it's just like dictation to yeah. me and just writing it out. Then it's written so quickly that I can't, I suppose, think.
Yeah.
So it's like a present when I finish.
Oh, surprise yourself, yeah.
yeah. Oh, right. Am I given everything? No.
No.
Never. So definitely no tats lot of numbers with me.
Yes, that was going to be my next question. But then again, can't say any of us look like we've got the low numbers.
We're not allowed to work on that thing of self-gain. Everything
yeah.
must be done in a way that it's good for the person that we're working with or myself.
Yeah. No, excellent. I find all this stuff fascinating. But I will head back to your book first.
Yeah.
So... you have some fantastic exercises in your book mm-hmm. as you're going through it. And one of the things in your book says here, do you think fear is holding you back from becoming the best version of yourself? Mm-hmm. So having a look at that trust and fear sort of going hand in hand. And we did love one of your quotes as well in there that said, trust takes years to build and seconds to break and forever to repair.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoying that. So maybe even just... how people can look at those fears or what they can do for that?
I think I'm also a meditation teacher. So one of the things that I find people do, and I'm also guilty of this,
yep.
is that we go over and over things in our mind, making them bigger than what they are.
Yeah.
And I often say with fear, I think it's almost like you have to step off a diving board.
Yeah.
And just keep on stepping off that diving board. The more you do that, more that flexibility comes in, more that trust comes in.
Yeah.
But there's so many fears out there, you know, fear of failure, fear of success.
Mm.
And it is an overwhelming emotion. I always suggest that meditation is something that everyone on this planet must learn.
Yes.
Because that quietens down that dull roar in your head of all the scenarios that could happen that don't usually happen.
And I guess, too, sometimes meditation doesn't necessarily always have to be that completely quiet
no.
zenning out.
No.
There's different ways you can
yeah.
find that headspace.
Yes, definitely. I use a lot of, I love sound.
Yeah.
A lot of people will use, you know, tinkling piano music. I actually
yeah.
like quite a long, a strong sound, whether it be a voice, whether it be the didge, whether it be drums, whether it be crystal balls. Yeah. I also, you know, I love a labyrinth meditation walk. It is something where we go, we want you, again, to be flexible in your discipline. You know, whether you go outside to meditate, listen to the birds.
I think it's great too what you're saying, sort of finding what works for them to find that state of mind. Yeah, I know
no right
for myself.
Or wrong way.
Yeah, and
it's
for myself.
Very individual.
Going for a drive quite often, which is going to sound very wrong at this point. But, you know, sometimes you can go for a bit of a drive, listen to some music, but you do find that headspace where you kind of get home and you're like, were all the lights green? Like, did I see that oncoming car? Because you can get into that trance state. Gardening might even do it for you, I guess.
Definitely.
Anything where you can kind of get
gardening,
into that other level.
We live near the ocean. Fishing.
Oh, fishing.
Watching
that's
waves.
A trance state, isn't it?
Anything creative as well, you know, if you're a creative soul and you're, you know, doing some mosaics or you're doing some pottery or any of that sort of stuff, you just get right into what you're doing and then all that other stuff seems to, you forgot that you have stopped with that monkey chatter.
Yeah, and it is a discipline. It just takes time to actually get used to the discipline.
Yeah.
What's your method of meditation?
Normally I would use imagery, so again I'll write the meditations and take the student through relaxing the body, but there will always be silence in that at the end of that imagery, because I want the student to basically delete me because they have to go home and do it themselves. So even though I have CDs and things, I want them to understand that I can't do the meditation for them. They have to take responsibility. Hence, I do give meditation homework.
Nice.
And it is usually just, you know, 5 minutes meditation if they're beginners. Or, you know, taking time for themselves.
Yeah. Is it like a visualization? Is that what you mean? Or?
Imagery, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so, say in the book, I've got quite a number of meditations. It can be as simple as one of those meditations is about fear and seeing what comes up in all your senses. You know, whether it be a memory, whether it is, you know, something that you're fearful about undertaking in the future. But it is about facing fears. Once we face a fear, we realize really how silly it is.
Yeah.
But it also takes work, and I understand that completely. Even over in the Solomons, I can't swim that well. But I have got my guides with me, so I've got a one up on people.
About the story about the boat.
Yes, we only ever had one good trip to the islands. The rest were like, are we going to die? They were pretty rough. But before I would step, and not often did we have life jackets, until one time we put our foot down and said, no, we need life jackets now. But I would always ask my guides beforehand, and they would say yay or nay. So I do trust them with my life. I have trusted them. And
so you're facing fear. I mean, over there in the Solomons, you're facing fear quite often, sounds of it.
Yeah. Even to walk down the street, it's quite intimidating. You know, I'm only 4'11", okay? So when you walk down the main street of Honiara, which is the capital of the Solomons, the islanders are very angry looking, very large. But on my first walk, I'm thinking, oh, now I've got this. This is easy. I'm going to be all prepared. Get not even halfway there, and I'm thinking, oh, this is not going well. Everyone's looking at me angry. And I started to actually get quite shaky, and my people in spirit said, little one, look at them, smile, say good morning. So you have to muster up the courage. All right, I've got to eyeball one of these islanders and say, good morning. And then immediately their faces just change. And it's, morning, morning, missus. And you kind of go, well, that went good. Let's do that again.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, by the time I'd got to where I needed to go, I was confident that, yeah, these people, they're not angry people. They just need to be acknowledged like everyone else in the world. And they are the most beautiful, open people. But they also are used to being judged. Mm. And that's why I had to say good morning. But, yeah, you get quite a number of different things that you're not used to in, say, Australia. One of them would be they do this kind of noise. It's like, and you're kind of looking around, kind of going, where is this noise coming from? And, you know, it's, but it gets really, really loud, and all they want you to do is look at them. So it's their way to ever actually say, hey, acknowledge me.
It's like a bit of a whistle.
Yeah.
Like we do a whistle.
Yeah, yeah.
Or click, you know. Oi, oi. But we usually ignore that, don't we?
Yeah.
But initially you think, what the goodness is going on? Why are they making this noise? Until you realise, they just need you to, you know, I'm here, look at me. Yeah.
Wonderful. Mm. Look, we've got to go sponsors, if I can find them. Here they are, beautiful sponsors. And we'll be back shortly with a few more questions and we'll round it up. We're really enjoying, we'd love to have you here all night. But maybe we can have you back another night. That'd be lovely.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll listen to our lovely sponsors. You're on 99.7 Bridge FM.
1984. No,
you're trying to work it out.
1984 was the Commonwealth Games. No. When was it, John? Help me. I was only, I don't know, 7, so I was too young.
Oh, gosh.
You might remember, though, when... Matilda, the big kangaroo. Yeah, I remember that at the games. And she winked at the Queen.
Oh.
And then the pouch fell open, all the kids ran out, and there was a big all over it.
That's amazing.
I have no idea where I pulled that from. But
I'm not going to tell you my memory. It's far too tame.
And I was living on that side of town when that was going on. So interesting. Thanks, John.
So we've been talking to Trina, the author of Clairvoyant Amongst the Coconuts, and certainly a very interesting story. You had a few more questions, Raven.
Yes, I've got a few more questions about, you mentioned spirit guides, which is always an interesting topic of conversation for many people, but I guess do people have to know the spirit guide's name or what they look like to be able to recognize them in their life?
No. Even some of my guides, I don't know their names.
Yep.
And one of my guides that has been with me since I was a very, very young child, her name is Claire. It was years before I saw her face.
Yeah.
I knew in my mind somewhat what she looked like.
Yeah.
And they got to a point where I said, I need to see your face, Claire. And she said, would you love your mother any less if you didn't see her face? And I'd said, no, but I need to see your face.
Yeah, hang on. Yeah.
So she did allow me to see her face. Do people have to see their guides? No.
Are there signs that they might use to show, not maybe show themselves, but get messages across to
definitely,
people?
Definitely. A lot of people call maybe the goosebump thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I call that tingles.
Yeah, tingles.
That will quite often happen, say, in a meditation class, mm-hmm. where the guide is trying to teach the student. There's different things where people may have the sense that someone standing next to them. They may dream about them.
Yep.
As a young girl, my Indian, and that's all I call him, my Indian used to come to me. I thought he was a dog, but learnt later that he was a wolf, a blue wolf.
Yep.
But I was only tiny, so he knew as a very large man not to scare me.
Oh,
but
nice.
As I got older, I actually saw that dog or wolf turn into my Indian. Yeah, so they always look at how much are you comfortable also to see.
I like that idea.
So if fear is in the way, and I always say this with my students, I don't want them to go further if there's fear there.
Yep.
You must be comfortable in whatever you do with spirit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's many, many different ways. But are there people that maybe have their spirit guides with them all through their life and they don't really know? Yes.
Well, I guess that sort of leads to my next question. Does everybody have spirit guides?
Yes. There will always be someone that is, whether it be guide, angel. I don't class my loved ones as my guides. I do have, you know, family members that stand with me, especially my grandmother. Mm-hmm. She's very strict when I read.
Yeah. And was she strict in life?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she wasn't a lovey-dovey grandmother, but I respected her.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't class my family as my guides because the guides have a greater knowledge. But again, it is sometimes easier for people to recognize the feel of a loving grandmother, uncle, even the smell.
Do you see other people's guides?
Yes. But again, we're taught that, well, I can give you hints. But it is like getting to know someone. You know, you need to do that yourself.
And I guess it might even be a little bit subtle in the beginning, so coming through.
Normally, if, say, a student is wanting to know their guide, the actual feeling with the guide will be stronger initially.
Yeah.
Then it becomes more subtle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So sometimes, I guess, with people, you're not – everybody's got their spirit guides, and just if you can't feel them right now doesn't mean you're broken and that you don't have them now. It's just getting used to it or just, I guess, being open to the idea of, you know, that we – I don't think I've met a human being that doesn't get tingles or the hair on the back of their neck stand up from time to time or feel
often,
things.
And quite often that is either your loved ones or your teachers or guides, whatever you would like to call them, saying you need to listen to this or maybe, you know, go forward or go this way or go that way.
Yeah.
But I would love a dollar for every time one of my students have said, I think my guides have gone on holidays. You know, because, you know, there's times where, well, they're a guide. They can't do it for you.
Yeah.
That is the term, guide.
Yeah.
They can guide you, but they can't control you.
You're not spirit leaders, are they?
No.
They're guides.
No, you're here.
It's a good way of putting it, actually. I like that. They're here to guide you, spirit guides.
Yeah,
I probably should have got it in the name.
To live your own life, to make your own choices. It would be a lot easier if they did make the choices. I have asked them in the past.
You wouldn't it be nice? Come on.
Just tell me which way to go. But no, they won't.
Because I guess in the end we have to make that
life.
Choice and, and use our free will.
It's through our choices that we create our life.
I like all those things. I'm quite happy over here. T, how are you going? You got some more questions?
Look, you've settled locally in Redcliffe. How long have you been in Redcliffe for?
3.5 years now.
Fabulous.
Yeah, and love it.
And are you calling this home now or you still feel like the Solomons?
I suppose I'm a bit weird that way because when I connect with something, it becomes my home.
It's your other home as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got three homes.
Okay. And the other one is?
Originally, I come from Victoria, a small town called Kyabram, but lived in Echuca, which is on the banks of the Murray River.
Echuca, Murray River?
So that was my original where I come from. Solomons is always going to be part of me, but I love Redcliffe. You know, I'm still amongst the coconuts too, T.
Can you feel? That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And you can feel, you know, there is an energy here.
Yeah.
Can you sense that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one where it's probably taken me a while to, I suppose, connect.
Yep.
But now I have, it is one where I go, it is my home.
Yeah.
It is my home.
Now, when and where is your book being launched?
So I have two launches. One in Victoria, which is on the 24th of August. The one in Redcliffe is on the 31st of August. And that's at the Bathers Bar at Sutton's Pavilion.
Okay.
Ollie Thompson has been really, really good with me. And that's from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So it's on a Saturday afternoon.
Yep. It's Rockin' for the Homeless is going to be on at the same time, I believe. Right. Oh. So this whole place is going to be party central on Redcliffe Peninsula.
Mm. Woohoo! Yes, but so I'm quite excited about both launches.
Now, so where can they find your book? After the launch or...?
The book is on Amazon.
Okay.
But hopefully, because Technotrain, that's my nickname because I'm not technically
minor. Oh, okay.
I will
on Kindle or something like that? Okay.
As well as hard copy.
Yep.
I'm very, very... I like to hold a book too.
Yes, so I like the smell of pages.
I understand the Kindle and have a lot of friends that like the Kindle, but I like to hold a book. So hard copy as well as the Kindle. But I'll also have a website up where the people can, you know, buy the book as well.
I'm sure there'll be a business somewhere in Redcliffe that may hold some for you too at
definitely,
some stage.
That'll be my next process as we're going into the launch.
Yeah. It's been absolutely amazing talking to you, Trina, and for your first time on radio, you're absolutely amazing. You've just broken that fear now.
Another thing.
I
have enjoyed it too.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I haven't missed you.
Thank you.
I've had a really, really great time.
Yep. Well, you're
a
natural.
Thank you so much for having me too.
No worries. And we'd love to have you back.
We'd love
to come
back.
There's an open invitation.
Thank you.
Fabulous.
I would love to come back.
Wonderful.